So welcome everyone to this session, where I am really excited to be talking with Hamid Ali. We're going to be coming at trauma from a slightly different perspective. We're going to look at it from the perspective of spiritual development, and that much of the suffering and the difficulties that we experience are at least in part related to disconnection from our true self, from our essence, from our true nature. So I think that's a frame that's really important in understanding suffering and experiencing really some of the deeper traumas that can happen for us in our lives. Just to give people Hamid's background, some of you will be very familiar with Hamid's work, some may be new to it. A. Hamid Ali, who writes under the pen name A.H. Almas, is founder of the Diamond Approach to Self-Realization, a contemporary teaching that developed within the context of both ancient spiritual teachings and modern depth psychology theories. Hamid has authored 18 books about spiritual realization, including the Diamond Heart series, The Pearl Beyond Price, The Void, and The Alchemy of Freedom. He is the founder of the Ridwan School for Spiritual Development, an inner work school developed to the realization of true nature. The orientation of the school is directed toward guiding students to realize their true nature to the fullest realization, and further still, to endless enlightenment. Hamid, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, good to be with you, Alex.
So, perhaps a good place to open this up a little bit is that many of us live our lives in a state of somewhat disconnection or lack of, I guess, connection to our essence, to our true nature. And that can be a real source of suffering. Perhaps you could say a little bit about that piece, but also how that relates to the sort of foundations of the teachings of your work.
This is actually the view of all spiritual teachings, that the primary source of suffering, beyond, you know, apart from the physical and all of that, is not being in touch with one's spiritual depth, or one's spiritual dimension. And in fact, most people don't even know they're not in touch with their spiritual depth. They don't even know they have a spiritual dimension. They think of spirit somewhere else, some heaven or something like that, or story. But spiritual teaching means practices and exercises and methodology to open up, to have access to such spiritual dimension that most people are not in touch with and not aware of. People are mostly in touch with their sensation, emotions, thoughts, and stuff like that. But the spiritual dimension is a whole other realm of experience, a different kind. And it is really the source of our true humanness. It is a source of love and compassion and clarity and determination and courage and all of that. I mean, like these days in the coronavirus atmosphere, you see many people coming out doing really good things and putting themselves on the line, sometimes in danger. And people say, you know, especially to me, they say, well, the human spirit is coming out. And I wonder, when they say human spirit, what they're talking about? Do they know what spirit is? They mean the goodness of humanity coming out. But where does this goodness come from? Where was it before? You know, most people, I mean, it's good this happening like that, but there isn't really an understanding that we do have a spiritual dimension. We have some spiritual nature or true nature, which is non-physical. But it, when we experience it, it's just as real as the physical, actually. It's what underlies the physical. But one thing I noticed in my work with students is that there's a work of about what's in the way, all the issues, all the barriers and the obstacles and the views and the beliefs and the concepts that are in the way. But at some point, they come and the experience of recognition, I'm not in contact, I am disconnected. And that is felt as a very deep wound. A really one, like a universal to oneself, total wounding in one consciousness, like something yanked out from the depth. And it is that pain is there in everybody. And that's fundamental, and people can reach it at some point. We have to experience it and become the entryway into the actual connection. But apart from that, just in ordinary life, we don't have access to our true goodness, to our true courage, to our true intelligence and clarity and love. Because when we experience them, that they're really real. They're almost substantial. They're palpable being, experiencing and being those, that palpable sense of beingness and spiritual nature and the true nature of consciousness. We see what we are, what is the meaning of our life, why are we here, what is really precious about a human life that we're trying to preserve is because we have this potential. When we see it, it's like thousands of times more precious than we think is precious in our life. And so, of course, to be estranged from that is bound to create all kinds of difficulties. Of course, there are the psychological reasons, the environmental reasons, all of that, that leads to problems. And some of it actually is part of the disconnection, what led to this disconnection. But many of those difficulties, like psychological kind of difficulties, conflict, pains, and different kind of suffering and conflict and, you know, and anguish, and is because we don't know what we are.
And there are many different ways that people try to deal with that pain and that suffering. And of course, we see yes. that in the different, you know, everything from addictions to people living a life of constant sort of doingness and busyness to there's many different strategies that people use to try and disconnect or numb or be free from that pain.
Yes. I mean, of course, everybody got their strategy of how to deal with not just deal with the disconnection, to deal with the results of it, the pain and the emptiness and the meaninglessness in one's life, and the disruptions or the conflict that arise in life and relationship with other people and with ourselves. People, you know, if you don't have a spiritual, you don't know your spiritual nature, it's difficult to talk about what is self-love. What is it you're loving? You see, and it's difficult to actually love somebody else in the sense of true love, meaning loving them for what they are, for who they are, not what I want from them. When we are in touch with those mission, these become natural things.
See? I think also when people start to make contact with that pain, and often that may be labeled as trauma, or there may be the traumas within that they can feel that there's something wrong with them, that they are alone in that experience of that deep suffering or that deep longing that's there. And I hope part of what may be very helpful for people to hear in what you're saying is that doesn't make them crazy. That doesn't make them different. That's actually an experience that is shared by everyone.
Everybody, anybody who has a sense of ego, a sense of self, is bound to have this kind of, it's universal suffering. As everybody has suffering, and it is both in the surface and at the depth, many levels. And in some sense, it is a trauma. I mean, people define trauma in different ways, you know, all the way from abuse and being, you know, hurt in an unbearable way, to, you know, loss and abandonment, and all of these are called trauma. But this is a trauma in a different direction. It is human trauma throughout the ages. There are always very few people who get access to their spiritual dimension, and they could feel a kind of fulfillment that has a natural, spontaneous happiness that is not interfered with by conflicts or emotional pain. But it's possible. I mean, that's what spiritual teaching are there for. That's what I spend my life doing, to help people connect with this part of themselves. And it does take work. It does take time, just like dealing with any kind of, you know, other kind of trauma. You know. And it has a different kind of rewards. You know, like I know, for instance, I have many students who have severe trauma. You know, and usually in our work, we don't really deal with the severe trauma that has to do with abuse and actual mistreatment, and because that has a kind of vulnerability and dissociation and stuff, the person then is not really a candidate for spiritual work. Spiritual work does need somebody to be a more normal kind of emotional makeup. So when I have encountered people like that in our work, I see that that kind of trauma is a barrier to them engaging the spiritual work. Regardless how much they meditate, not much happens, because they dissociate at a deep level. They can't connect. So what I do with these people, I send them to trauma therapists. And after a few years working out, they come back, it's possible for them to start working to access their spiritual depth. And what I noticed then, is that the trauma therapy, especially if I send them to somebody good, you know, some good people, you know, and is that they do go through the trauma and they become able to be open. However, the openness is not to a spiritual reality. They're more open emotionally and they can be vulnerable without getting terrified or frozen. But they still carry with them the sense of being a traumatized person. That's one thing I see lacking in most trauma therapies, is that they don't deal with the identity of a trauma identity. So that is part where spiritual work become really handy, which is like, doesn't matter what your history was, you know, whether you were traumatized or you're a neglected person or whatever, if that forms your identity, it will continue being there and will become a barrier to that spiritual kind of dimension that will give you true joy and happiness, knowing oneself in a good way, and being able to be truly generous with other people and help from a clear way, not from a selfish, self-centered way.
One of the things that was, having been a student of your work for many years, one of the things that was most helpful to me, particularly early on, was, and you touched on a little bit earlier, was the realization that deep pain and suffering was not something to be gotten rid of and not something to escape. It was actually the gateway. It was actually the moving through that was the way to contacting something that was deeper. Perhaps you could say a bit about how the present moment and how our immediate experience, whatever we find to be there, is actually the way in rather than something to be run away from.
Yeah, one thing to realize that is specific to the kind of spiritual teaching I give. Not all spiritual teaching do that. Many spiritual teaching don't deal directly with the pain or with the trauma. They go around it with different kind of techniques, you know, visualization, prayer, whatever. But to actually welcome and embrace the present moment experience, whether it's just normal or boring or painful, to embrace it and to understand it, any kind of pain. All the way to that deep, total wounding of being disconnected from a spiritual nature, to embrace it and to understand what it is. I mean, so embracing it doesn't mean identifying with it. It means experiencing it fully, recognizing that it is what I'm experiencing now. If I reject it, I reject something about myself. So embracing it and understanding it and feeling it as much as possible, which, as you see, means the person has to be able to feel and be in touch with themselves, with their body, and with their emotion, with their heart, and really feeling the pain. Usually, if we really feel, especially that deeper wounding, and it's like a gash in the center of the body, from top to bottom, and almost you could actually sometimes have a visual sense of it as it's a bloody kind of wound. And feels hurt, like an emotional hurt, physical hurt. If you feel it and tolerate it and then let it happen and go through it, becomes like a portal, a wormhole as you go in, and then the thing become open and spacious. The spaciousness and the wounding clears out. The spaciousness then leads to the possibilities of the human spirit. And then all kind of things that can arise that are more pure qualities of consciousness, like pure love or pure awareness or things like that. That it's amazing what happened. And also the sense of true self, recognizing, yes, like the spiritual nature arises in a way within oneself that feels right. At the center, this is my center, this is what I am. That's what gives meaning, true meaning to my life, meaning that is independent of everything else that happens in my life, everything I do or I don't do.
To be able to use the word tolerate, and I think that's quite a good word sometimes, be able to learn to feel that pain and that suffering can be very difficult initially. And I sort of reflect on some of my own early experiences in your work, and moments of very intense terror arising, and in a sense of wanting to do almost anything but stay with and feel. And I think I appreciate the distinction that you made between specific kind of PTSD trauma, where someone needs to work with a professional in that context, versus what can still be incredibly difficult and intense feelings that can come up. What helps people learn to stay present to that? What helps people learn to increasingly tolerate and metabolize and move through those experiences?
Well, first, to go to that central wounding, not easy to go directly to it, because the practice I do is to inquire into our present experience at the moment, whatever it is. And by doing that, we encounter different kind of difficulties, emotional conflict, anguish, frustration, feeling hurt, feeling rejected. Feeling all these have pains and difficulties. So a person works with all of these, plus fears and jealousies and all kinds. So as the person works with these things, and continues and as one actually works with these things, they have more access to the spiritual nature, but not in its fullness, just some qualities. That sort of trains their consciousness to be at ease with difficulties, with pain. So by the time we get into that deeper wounding, the person is already somewhat acclimated, some used to that, that pain is not a problem. This kind of inner pain, which is more of an emotional quality, is more psychical quality, not really physical, also almost feels physical. And the terror around it, first is a terror, because you feel you're going to die, basically.
Yep.
You're going to die, you're going to disappear, nothing will be left of you, because it is a dissolving of the sense of usual sense of self-identity, which brings in the terror. And then, of course, the pain itself is, as I said, pain is difficult. But usually the practice, because the person does it for a while, for some few years, there is a practice in learning how to stay with one's experience. And of course, I also give specific practices of presence, you know, that are like more meditation style practices. When a person learns to just be present in their body, regardless of what there happened, to be present in the here and now, regardless of what's happened. But that is a supportive practice to the practice of actually exploring what is happening. And that we're going deeper and deeper. Most people think if they explore their emotion, they will just to get to the deeper emotions, or they will get to the childhood and some. They don't know that's you're still on the horizontal level. You could penetrate that deeper if you know how to stay with it, and how to, when you're feeling pain or emptiness, that's not the end. You know, you staying and being comfortable with it, or at least letting it be. The curtain opens to something else, a whole other dimensions. Of course, psychologists, therapists are not trained in that. They don't know about that unless they have a spiritual background. But, you know, a spiritual teacher, that's what they do. I mean, so that's my way of working with it. Many people who do spiritual teaching, they don't deal with pain, whatever, it's just be aware that you are consciousness, you know, you are the silence, or something like that. And you can do that, but that doesn't really deal. The pain is not gone, or just connection.
There's something that I wonder about how to bring it a bit more alive for people, that I certainly, again, reflecting in my own experience, there's something about the experience of when one, you describe it like a portal, when one sort of pops through and has that taste or that contact with what we call it, essence or true nature or whatever, which is a very experiential thing that's quite hard to just understand as a concept or as an idea. And I wonder for people that are watching this, that are, it's sort of, they think, well, how could it possibly be the case that the place that I least want to go to is actually the place for something new to happen, for something to open? Perhaps you could say a bit more about what's there on the other side of those portals, like what it is that one is, perhaps a bit about what true nature is, or what it is that one's accessing through those portals.
You see, people, individuals who are not familiar with spiritual experience or with spiritual practice, when they hear us, they think it sounds abstract and mental, because they can't relate to it. So it appears as words. While I'm talking about from experience, from knowing very concrete, palpable experience sometimes. You know, experiencing, for instance, true fulfillment is nothing like an emotion of feeling fulfilled. You really feel your heart full of some kind of nectary sweetness that pervades the whole consciousness and melts you from inside. That's more palpable than any emotion or thought. So, but people don't know there's such a thing. So they say, well, you must be just fantasizing or imagining, or that's what many people who are not involved in a spiritual teaching will think. Or they think, you know, it's either an imagination or an exaggeration. Or if a neurologist, you say, well, some part of your brain probably firing one thing. But, you know, it's, you have to have the experience for this to really make sense. So if you don't make sense, if you don't have the experience, for some people, they just have a sense of something missing. They have a sense that their life missing something, or there's some emptiness, meaningless, or they have a yearning or longing for something more fundamental, something more profound that gives their life some kind of inherent meaning. So many people are aware of that before they're aware of actual spiritual dimension. So I will say, for those people who are feeling like that, or feeling something is missing, or something, then they are not, their life or their experience is not complete, or that they're yearning for something, they don't know what it is. I will tell those people, you're right. You are on the right track. Follow that feeling. See where it takes you.
You mentioned one of the tools that, that you teach is the practice of inquiry. Say a little bit about what inquiry is and how that helps with sort of this deepening and this following of these threads.
Yeah. So inquiry is similar to psychotherapy, but very different. Similar in the sense it deals with ordinary content, with emotion, feelings, sensations, and all of that, and you know, mental calm. It's different in the sense it is staying with the here and now, with what I am experiencing in this moment. It might bring association from the past or something like that, which are also welcomed. However, it is staying with the experience and not taking it to be all that there is, not taking it at face value, and not assuming I really know what it means, what it is. Most people are not even aware of all of their experience anymore. So the first, we need to be in touch with as much of our experience as possible. The next thing is to acknowledge our unknowing, our incomplete knowing of what it is. And that can bring then a sense of curiosity, of wanting to know, what is it? Because I want to know what I'm experiencing, where it's coming from. And then there is, you know, the teaching has very precise instructions and skills about how to look into the experience and feel it. Look into it, I don't mean visually, I mean to sense it and feel it and even see it. And with a curiosity and a questioning of what it is, where it's come from, what's about, like if I'm feeling some kind of a sense of a little bit sad, for instance, a little bit sadness. So, okay, let me see, what's the sadness feel like? Oh, it feels like something pervading the chest area, something like, you know, teary, whatever. I would say, okay, it's teary. What's this teariness about? I could, when I look into it, I feel, well, it also has a warmth to it. So there's, you know, more and more finer discrimination. Oh, it is, it has a warmth to it. It has a warmth to it. What is the warmth? Because I'm sad about something. It's a feeling. Yes, there's sadness, but the warmth is not just sadness. The warmth is feel like there's a warm atmosphere as it's filling the consciousness. And when I sense into this warm atmosphere, what's it like? I feel a tenderness, a delicacy and fineness. And I said, what's that? That's not exactly sadness. And so, as you see, it is a matter of exploration and questioning and curiosity. What is this tenderness? When I feel this tenderness, this warmth, I start to feel caring. I can feel caring for myself or for other. And then I reckon, oh, this is kind of a love that is has more kindness in it. There's a loving kindness. And then become very precise. It is loving kindness. And I could sense it. I know the texture of it. I know the feeling of it. I know the effect of it as kind warmth and a tenderness that makes me feel capable to be empathic, attuned in a very, you know, immediate way. So that, you see, I went through by exploring my experience. I went from what I'm just feeling a little sad to experiencing a spiritual kind of dimension, where our spiritual nation can be.
And it's what I think is important as well about what you're describing is it's one's using one's heart and one's felt sense. One's also using the clarity of one's mind to be curious. That it's a sort of fully embodied approach of exploration.
Well, this inquiry that I work with requires all everything, all of our experience, our body with its sensations, requires our heart and feeling and affect, and requires the mind with its knowing and discrimination, even memory, because some of the stuff are related to things in the past, and that can bear into understanding the truth of what is happening. So it is an integration, actually, of all what we call the three centers. You know, what Gurdjieff called the three centers of operation of the human being.
I think it's also, you mentioned the body there, and I also think that, you know, just to kind of tie together some of these pieces we've been touching on so far, perhaps say a bit about why the sensing practice, why being connected and present to one's body is an important sort of anchor or foundation or support of this process.
It's very simple. Most people, they experience whatever they experience in their body. You know, the experience happens in the body, through the body. So if somebody is not in touch with their body, with the sensation of their body, they're not in touch with their experience in any full way. They're just aware of the outer expression of the experience or the action that comes out. But they don't know what the experience, because we human beings really are, each one of us is an experiential field. We are a sensitive experiential field where experience bubble up in it. And that happens in the body, inseparable from the body, and a major part of the experience is sensation. Because even emotions, there's no emotion without sensation. See. So to be in touch with that, and we do a lot of practices, physical practices, you know, breathing practices, all kinds of meditative practices to be as in touch with the body as possible, to open up the body, because the body is also closed down with tension, history, and all that. It needs to be liberated from all these constrictions. So the body needs to be liberated, the heart needs to be liberated, and the mind needs to be liberated from its prejudices, from its position, from its ideas. So it's open to see something new, freshly.
Hopefully for people that are watching, that there's something that's very reassuring or sort of supportive about the idea that we're not trying to escape, we're not trying to get away from. What we're actually learning to do is to be present to and inquire into and explore what's there. But I imagine there's also people that are watching this that have experienced traumas, not just historically in their life, but also as part of their spiritual path, that people have had sometimes quite difficult experiences with certain traditions. People have sometimes related to themselves in ways that have been too harsh. Or I wonder if you could say a little bit about how trauma can show up on the spiritual path and in spiritual practice.
Well, first of all, especially because you go deeper in your experience, your unconsciousness, your unconscious manifests whatever there is in it. Some people have classical traumas there they didn't know about. You know, I work with people who, after 5-6 years of working, she recognizes she was sexually abused by her father. She didn't know that, you see. So it comes up. So those things can be encountered in spiritual work. Spiritual work can unearth these things. And whether then me or another can work with it depends on the intensity of that kind of trauma. If it is not so intense, a person not too dissociated, I can work with. Otherwise, I'll send them to a specialist, somebody who works with trauma. But there are, we encounter many kind of lesser traumas, like being abandoned and alone as a child, having a broken home, father and mother are separated and fighting and all of that. It's very painful for a child. And that's something we have to contend with, we have to experience, because it determines a lot of what we experience consciously. So all of these things are I mean, human life is full of trauma if you take it in this general sense. It's human race is traumatized that way. It's full of pain. And Buddha said it, life is suffering. He meant physical, but actually, and when you go to Buddhism, it is psychological more than anything else. So there's a lot of reason why there's psychological pain. A lot of it historical, but a lot of it is also fundamental. The fact that we are not conscious of who we truly are.
Sometimes when people get in touch with, be it that kind of core wound, or be it some of the psychological suffering, it can feel very overwhelming. Sometimes it can come up for people that I don't have what it takes to deal with this. And I think sometimes it's hard to unsee things once you've seen them. And I think people can sometimes find themselves in these very tricky places where they've started to contact things and feel things that feel very frightening and overwhelming, but they don't know where to go with that. What supports people moving through those really difficult chapters on their inner path?
Well, of course, somebody can learn to do meditation and stuff to support themselves. But the way I teach it is that a person really needs a teacher, somebody who can help them, who can be in their presence, they can be working with them. The teacher will be the support, the outer support that allows the person to sort of dive into their experience and feeling there's somebody there who understands, who's there, who's able to help them tolerate the situation. So my work, we have private or one-to-one kind of session to help the person to go specifically into their experience. We have what we call small groups, where a teacher have a group of 12 people, so they're all working with each other, you know, working on the stuff that's arising in them. We have what we call a larger group, where the teacher giving a teaching, a particular presentation of one thing about spiritual nature, another, and the obstacles to it. A lot of them are difficult, and obstacles are always difficult in people. Nobody likes the obstacles in themselves because blockages, that's what it means. So yes, the person needs a lot of support. Most people won't be able to do it by themselves.
Yeah.
Most people need help of somebody else, and spiritual friend, we call it, or a teacher.
Yeah, there's something I think as well about being part of a community that's on a similar path that provides, because often I think, again, perhaps sometimes another trauma of being on a kind of inner path is one starts to feel distance from perhaps the people that had been their group of friends or community, because what's really interesting to someone when they're starting to open up is just different to what's there in sort of day-to-day life. And there can be a kind of trauma sometimes of isolation and separation and that absence of holding and support. And that being part of a student body can be quite important, I guess, in holding people.
Yeah. That's why, you know, you notice that around the world, individual who became illuminated or awakened by themselves alone without being in a group, there are very few. You could count them, you know, with the fingers of the hand, you know, at the present time. So that's why, but for most people, they really need some kind of field, a supportive kind of context. And that is a group of individual who are studying the same thing, when learning the same thing, working the same thing the same way. So they understand each other, mirrors for each other, supporter for each other, and they question and confront each other. So everybody is being truthful with each other. Everybody is interested in knowing the truth of who they are. And part of the truth of who they are is to know their relationship with each other. So working out the relationship between the two with each other is a rich field when covering all kind of difficult history and traumas and it's a relational part that is, it's a big part of human life.
And yet it also, it strikes me that there are many stories over the years of spiritual communities, particularly built around sort of charismatic kind of spiritual leaders that can have big shadows sometimes. And there's also a lot of trauma of people being part of student bodies or teachings that have ended up with problems. And yeah, how I think sometimes that can be almost the deepest trauma when one opens themselves on that very deep level. How can one wisely choose a path? You know, what are some of the discerning questions that can be helpful for someone to ensure that they're not going down a path which is likely to, particularly I think people that have trauma histories can sometimes resonate with abusive structures in a sense, as something that's almost familiar for them in that. What do you have any sort of suggestions of sort of checks and balances or ways that people can?
You're right. I mean, people who are traumatized tend to not notice that the person they're working with is traumatizing, is doing something inappropriate, because they think for them it's normalized. And it has happened in many cases where the teacher is inappropriate, exploitative, traumatizing. I mean, just like recently in Europe, we have Sagil Rinpoche, for instance, got exposed by his own student that he was being abusive. And the tradition he's in is Buddhism is not an abusive tradition. It's compassion is the main thing. But he, as an individual, hasn't worked out his own needs, his own, you know, demons in some sense, regardless of how illuminated he was, which tells you another thing, like just being illuminated doesn't mean you've worked out all these things. That's why I mentioned earlier, people go around these things instead of working through them. So yes, that happens. And I remember the Dalai Lama responded to that. They said, well, because some other Lama said, well, when you choose a spiritual teacher, whatever the spiritual teacher says is the right thing. You have to follow them. And the Dalai Lama said, no, you need to question. You need to make sure. And you need to use your intelligence and your clarity. And that's how I see it. That really, first of all, in a spiritual teaching, you want to find out what is it appropriate to you, what resonates with you. Because there are many spiritual teachings of different kinds. What resonates and makes sense to oneself. But then you need to vet the teacher. In the sense, you know, not think of them as godlike. They are a human being beside being in touch with their spiritual dimension. And to see how they are. How they are, not just their luminous and deep and eloquent, all of that. How they are in their relationship with their students. How they interact with their students. How they live their life. Where they have addictions or hidden things that the students talk about in the background but don't bring up to the teachers, for instance. You need to be aware of all of these things because you don't want to get into the situation and get involved for many years to find out that this teacher not only be abusing other people, you might have been the object of some kind of exploitation, even not abuse. And then that's a deep wound. And when people, and that happens to people, I know a few people in our school who were with teachers like that, it's very difficult to get over it. It's like difficult for the person then to trust the teacher because they were betrayed. That's how they felt. They were betrayed, very deep betrayal when they are the most vulnerable. When you're working with your spirituality, you are totally vulnerable inside. You know, you're totally open. So if you get exploited or hurt in a way that is inappropriate, it's really painful. It's really difficult. And it takes some time and take contact with spiritual teaching and maybe with other students who can know the teacher and the teaching and that. But it is, you know, it is sad that that happens in an area where it's supposed to be get people in touch with the goodness of humanity, with the compassion and love and the true intelligence and clarity, that kind of thing happens. And it is traumatic. I mean, people do get traumatized. It's like big trauma. They might need actual experts sometimes to first deal with trauma before trying to connect with another spiritual teaching or teacher.
And I guess it's important people realize that just like one can grow up in an abusive, dysfunctional family, it doesn't mean that all family structure is dysfunctional and abusive. And the same with spiritual paths, that just because someone's been wounded in one place, it's important to remember that that's not reflective of everything that's out there.
Yeah, it is true. But for a person who was traumatized in a spiritual teaching, it's very difficult for them to trust.
Yeah.
To open up and trust. And I understand that, you know, and I've seen it happen. I've interacted with people, with many individuals like that, and I sympathize with them, actually. Because they were wounded in a place that is very deep, you know. So it's a question of trust then.
Yeah.
How to trust and open up in a deep way. And in opening up in a deep way, means working through that trauma with the other teacher or the other teaching. It requires that, you know. So how do you work with this in a spiritual context on a trauma that happened in a spiritual situation? It's a tough one, but some people do get through it.
Yeah.
It's possible to get through it. It's not the end, because you're right. Not all spiritual teachings are the same. Not all spiritual teachers are the same. There are spiritual teachers who are really wholesome, who don't have, you know, big or destructive shadows, you know. And there are some who have a shadow part of themselves that hasn't been worked out. And part of it depends on the teacher, and part of it depends on the teaching. What kind of teaching? Does it deal with these things or not? Because a teaching that doesn't deal with emotions and history, whatever, tend to produce illuminated people who have not worked through. They still have that shadow. But there are teaching who work with these things directly, and that is more certainty that the teacher will be more clean that way.
Yeah.
Safe.
Yeah. Hamid, I'm mindful of time, but for people that want to find out more about you and the Diamond Approach and the Ridwan School, what do you suggest as a good entry point? What's a good way for people to find out more?
Well, I mean, we have an online department now, so Diamond Approach Online, for instance, one can go there and see our courses, online courses, a short one, a longer one, to begin. Or somebody can go to our main website, diamondapproach.org, and that way see what the teaching is about. And there are ways there to how to access a teacher, for example, if you want to just connect with a teacher to work with individually, and instead of getting into a group, we can actually find out about a group that are beginning or open and choose a group if you're ready for a group. But many people are not yet ready for a group, and they might need to take some couple or so online courses and see what's it like for them. And so they have more taste, more direct experience of the teaching.
I probably shouldn't say it, but of all the things that we're covering in this conference, your work has been the thing that helped me the most. So I would certainly encourage people to explore further. Hamid?
Well, you went through many of those wounds. Yeah. Obviously, the way you're asking questions, I could tell you have encountered that and worked with it, which is nice.
Yeah. Hamid, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I really encourage people to explore further. Hamid,
thank you. I hope it is helpful for people who listen to it. Yeah. Whenever I do something, I want it to be useful.
Hamid, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Good talking to you.